greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the net control operator for this Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going strong for more than 43 years now. Every night, every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit down in front of our radios and share with each other, learn from each other, teach each other, inform each other, and amuse each other if we're lucky. So I thank you all for coming back and sitting down and participating in another round of this. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Well, I will give you a kind of a pair of links for each, because some people like to use the old one, and other people like to use the new one. If you would like to contact me through email, my email address is either mailbag@ac2gs.com, or the new one, which is roy@limarktech.net. Again, that's limarktech.net, so that's Roy. Anyway, that would be for questions if you can't get on the technical net on Sunday nights, or if you would like to be part of a conversation about some topic, either present the topic, be part of it, or just sit back and listen about it. Or if you have any technical puzzles to share with me, we're always looking for them. So if you have any, please send them to me. Or if you want me to poke Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a NASA or a space-related story, now you can reach him directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com. But again, if you want to reach me, I'm at roy.limarktech.net. Also, we have a link page. I cut and paste a bunch of interesting articles I've seen over the past week and put it in a link page that you can click at any time of the day, 24/7. You get there either by typing in roy.ac2gs.com or the new link, which is link.limarktech.net. Also, we have a chat room available. It's been rather quiet lately. You can get there the old way by typing chat.ac2gs.com or the new way by typing in chat.limarktech.net. And we have an audio stream of the technical net, and I leave it on the rest of the week. So if you want to listen to an internet stream of the Glen Oaks repeater, you type in either technet.ac2gs.com or the new one, which is stream.limarktech.net. And I also like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of these technical nets that go as far back as September 2006. So please take a look at that if you have a chance. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned. As per usual, we're going to ask people for questions, comments, what have you. I would prefer if the first set are amateur radio related, because this is an amateur radio technical net. But as always, if you have any questions or comments or would like to discuss some other aspect of technology or science, I'm more than happy to try my best. If I can't give you an answer, I might suggest some reference materials to look at. Anyway, that should take us to approximately 10:50, when Paul, WS2N, will come on with the SpaceNet report, which will take us to 11 p.m. I will return around that time and wish you all well and put a bow on it all and send you back. So that's the plan. If the laws of physics and the All-Star Link continue to work the way they're doing right now. So with that in mind, I will drop and ask anyone who has any topics or questions tonight to please hit that push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or non-amateur radio related.
N2ZXL Alpha Mobile, got a question, amateur?
Okay, what's your first name and give me your call sign a little slower this time.
Sure, name is Glenn, Golf Lima Echo November, and the call is November 2, Zulu Echo Alpha.
Okay, Glenn, I got you on the list. Anyone else want to join Glenn?
K2VHD, Jim, radio question.
Jim recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, we'll see. I'm sure as time goes on, there'll be other questions and comments and what have you. So first on our list for tonight is Glenn. What is your question tonight, Glenn?
Question cleaning out the closet, found a box of coax cables. I was wondering, how do you go about measuring the impedance of the cable?
Well, the easiest way that I could suggest to do that is to use a vector network analyzer. Now, 10 years ago, that would be a terrible answer because a vector network analyzer would set you back $1,000 possibly. Now you can get a halfway decent nano VNA for about 60, 70 bucks. You set it up for what's called time domain reflectometry, which is a fancy way of saying that it bounces a signal and detects any non-standard impedances. So in other words, as long as your transmission line is a perfect 50 ohms, it tells you how long your piece of wire is. If it meets any point where the impedances are non-50 ohms, it will read it with a deflection and at the length if you give it the right velocity factor. So that would be my suggestion. The best approach would be also to put a 50 ohm load at the end of it, just to keep it nice and clean, and then just run them through a VNA, and that should give you an idea whether they're at 50 ohms, or worse, if there's some portion of the transmission line that's damaged in some way and is offering your signal a off impedance number.
Very interesting. Will it also tell if there's connectors along the way if they're not soldered properly?
Yes. Depending upon how badly they're working, that will show a discontinuity as well. It'll show UHF. Unfortunately, UHF connectors are not designed to be 50 ohm impedance devices. N connectors are, which is why sometimes people really prefer the N connectors. It's also a function. The loss is a function of the length of the impedance mismatch, and they're not very long. So the amount of loss just from the fact that UHF connectors are not 50 ohms is usually insignificant. You know, if you put 10, 20 of them together, it might add up a little bit, but a lot less than most people think. So the short answer is yes. If you have if the connector is kind of flaky, it'll demonstrate it. It'll reflect back your signal prematurely and won't go to the full length of your wire.
How about if they're coax microphone cables? Will it tell you what the impedance is then?
I don't know because I've never really played around with anything other than 75 and 50 ohm impedances. Have we got any electrical engineers out there? Is it relatively easy to figure out the transmission line impedance of a non-standard transmission line? Well, it seems our electrical engineers out there are doing something else, so I don't know. I'm sure you could kind of Google it. I'm sure there's a way to use a VNA in order to figure out the impedance of a given non-standard transmission line. I just don't offhand know how you do it. But there's lots of VNAs out there, a lot of YouTubes on nano VNAs. So I'm willing to bet there's got to be at least a few YouTubes where a guy actually does measure the impedance of a non-standard transmission line using them.
Well, thank you. I think you can take a look on Amazon tonight. 73, take care.
73, Glenn, if the idea of Amazon is to get a nano VNA, they're very nice. They're all of Chinese manufacture. My understanding is the electrical engineer that designed the circuitry was a Japanese gentleman, and he kind of gave it open source to everyone, so the Chinese factories pumped them out. There are Series 1 and Series 2. Probably you're better off to stay with the latest, greatest. Also, there are different size displays. There is the small display and the slightly larger display. The slightly larger display is, I think, 4 inches diagonal. I don't know about your vision, but with my vision, the bigger the display, the better, although you can plug it into computers. And another option is what kind of connector you want to deal with. Most of them are SMA connectors. I happen to have bought one that have end connectors on them. I find them a little bit more sturdy to deal with. So I wish you good luck, Len.
Great. Thank you for the help. Appreciate it. And to the Nickel Alpha.
You're welcome, Glenn. Anyone with any comments before we move on to the next person? Okay, so on to you, Jim.
Good evening, Roy and Annette. I want to revisit a question that I had on off-center dipole setups that I think I've zeroed in on the one I'm building. The question has to do with balance and chokes and whatnot. So I'm building an off-center fed dipole, 80 and below. I have measurements that I've settled on based on what I think is good advice, but I seem to be confused. It would take a 4-to-1 balun to correct the impedance on it from 200 ohms to 50 ohms, and there seems to be a discrepancy on whether it requires also a 1-to-1 choke balun or equivalent in addition to the 4-to-1 balun. I realize this is a belt and suspenders type question, but I was looking for some feedback. I have the measurements if anybody's interested.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of depends upon the design of the 4-to-1 balun. Most of them will operate simultaneously as common mode chokes. You can, of course, put a common mode choke after it. It doesn't really impact. It does no detrimental thing other than cost you a couple more bucks. But if there's no common mode, it doesn't do anything. If there is some common mode, it's indeed, as you mentioned, belt suspenders, but I'm a big fan of belt suspenders and occasionally staple gun.
Ouch. Okay, that philosophy seems sound to me. Any other feedback from elsewhere?
Okay, so we'll throw it out to the vocal audience out there. Anyone have any comments to make about Jim's off-center fed dipole and the nature of balance and RF chokes?
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
Yeah, it's always the poor man's balun. Wrap your coax a few turns.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly is an option. I've lately kind of grown questioning the use of an air core inductor as an RF choke. My understandings are that the amount of impedance that it applies to common mode is not particularly great. You can make it up by having a lot more loops of the coaxial cable. I tend to use expensive coaxial cable, so it becomes a lose-lose proposition as far as I'm concerned, but that certainly can be a kind of secondary RF choke method. My suggestion is if you can afford it, you know, buy yourself a ferrite loop and just loop the coax a few times around the ferrite. Every time you loop it, you square the number of loops at being effective in, as far as impedance is concerned.
I actually have that built already, and then I realized with the offset effect I was going to have an impedance mismatch, so I was thinking about stacking them up, and it sounds like that's doable, if not, I guess, as belt suspenders and the staple gun. Ouch, is an interesting analogy.
Yeah. I mean, ugly balans are perfectly fine. I've played around with them. I got this kind of attitude from watching too many clever guys on YouTube that had legitimate suggestions over the years. As opposed to, you know, if you, of course, listen to, there's a guy from Palomar who sells ferrites who promotes ferrites. So I understand where his opinions might be slightly biased. But I've heard from a whole bunch of amateurs who don't seem to have any professional links to any ferrite manufacturing companies. Some of the more technical thinking guys don't even particularly like the clamp-on ferrites because they suggest that you have to keep the surfaces relatively clean. If some kind of grit gets in and you have a gap, it undermines the efficiency of clamp-on, so they kind of like the solid ring. And, you know, if the hole's big enough, you can loop the coax a few times and have it be a very good, RF choke.
What I have built right now is a toroid of FT240 type 43 wrapped with 12 wraps of RG58. That's the suspenders, and the belt is the coming 4-to-1 balance. It sounds like I'll do both. No downside to it.
Like I said, I don't see a downside, and to 12 loops on the ferrite, that's going to have a great impedance.
Nice. Okay, that's all. I have a radar-related question related to current events, but I'll leave that for later in the net. I'll pass it back to you. Thanks, Roy.
Okay, very good, Jim. We got down two people out of two people, and it's 18 minutes after the hour. This might end up being one of the shorter technical events. Nevertheless, I continue to be AC2GS. My name continues to be Roy. This continues to be the Weimar Technical Network. So we're here to discuss science and technology. So if you're out there and you have either a topic for discussion or a question or a comment to be made, please hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
WB2AHK, query.
Yes, query away.
All right, WB2Alpha Hotel Kellogg. I just recently, in the last month, built a off-center fed HF antenna, and I have some success with it, and it's not an NFED, and I'm not sure if the... I didn't get the call letters of the station that was asking about the off-center fed and type antennas, and I'd like to correspond with them because I had some experience building an NFED and then built a regular dipole NFED, and it's working phenomenally, and I got the information on the lens, and it worked on my property location due to, of course, the size of my small area here. And it was supposed to be for 40 to 10. And there was some information about that 15 meters wouldn't work in my particular length. And if you change the balun to a different impedance, you could get... 15 back, but then you'd lose 20. But anyway, it had some very good luck, and then I hooked up a counterpoise to it, to the grounded side, and I also, of the antenna, let me let it drop for a second. Alright, I hooked up a counterpoise to it, which I just hooked up around the yard, and at first it didn't work. The antenna didn't work. I was much disappointed with the antenna. It wasn't anything like the instructions and the dimensions given in the article. It came from an ARRL antenna book, and I was very discouraged with the matching and so on. So I hooked up a counterpoise antenna to it, and all of a sudden it was phenomenal. Everything went way down in SWR, most of it less than 1.5, some cases 1.1. And later on I discovered it was supposed to be a 40 to 10 antenna. I didn't get 15 meters because the impedance was way out, way away from, you know, matching. But I found out that I had full coverage of 75 meters with a phenomenal signal match. And getting out fantastically with this antenna. So I wanted to find out from the gentleman if what his call letters are, and I'll look him up on QRZ. I'd like to correspond with him if he wants to build something, and maybe we can explore what he's doing, and I can tell him how happy I am with my antenna. Roy, if it's okay, could I ask that station how to reach him? Maybe he has an email address he could give me, or... just tell me to look on QRZ. So that station, could you just come back for a moment? I want to get your information. Go ahead.
Jim, KD2VHD. So Hospital Delta 2, Victor Hotel Delta. Unfortunately, I don't have any alternative emails and such, and I haven't really made an entry in QRZ. Do you have something like that, and I can contact you? That would work.
Yes, Jim. KD2VHD. I can give it out over the air, but if you go to my QRZ information, WB2A, A is America, H Hotel, K Kilowatt, it gives my email address, which is exactly the same as my call letters, except it's AOL.com, WB2AHKAOL.com. And we can explore building that antenna. I've never had an antenna that works so well. I'm 60 years into the hobby. Built many an antenna. And previous to building this antenna, I tried an NFED, and I was very discouraged by it because I wanted to run high power to it. And my anon wouldn't hold the power, and it got burning hot. So anyway, long story. I have some information, and I'd like to compare with you what you're trying to do, and you might be interested in how it's been working out for me. Okay, thank you very much, Roy. I have it, and I appreciate it. WB2 Alpha Hotel Kilo.
Check out the tape I got. WB2AHK, thank you very much. I'll send you something by email. That's very interesting. Interesting, you have 60 years in the hobby. I have almost 60 years on the planet, and I appreciate your experience. Thanks again. Back to them.
Okay, very good. Chad, if you don't mind, I'd like to chat about your off-center dipole for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how long I'm going to be, you know, the trouble with me is I have to get up early in the morning. I get up at 5:30 and go to work. And sometimes I listen to the TechNet quite a bit while I'm doing other things on the computer or whatever. And sometimes I fall asleep at the switch, because 10 o'clock is my the time I go to bed. And many times I've been tuned to the TechNet, and I found myself lying down on my day bed here. And my wife has to come up and wake me, and I miss part of the TechNet because I fall, you know, automatically fall asleep at a certain time. But yeah, sure. It's amazing. I can't believe how good this antenna is working, and it's everything I ever wanted in an antenna, ever. Since I've been in a hobby. I probably built 100 at least, 100 different antennas over the years, at least 100. So this one worked really well, but it didn't match the what it said in the article, in the QSD article about the antenna. And just by a slight bit of luck, by hitting, putting a counterpoise on one side of it, at the barrel in there, all of a sudden, boom, it came alive. All right. So, yeah, sure, Roy. We'll get in touch with you, or we'll talk about it. Maybe later if I'm still awake. okay, Roy, WB2 Alpha Hotel Kill.
Well, if you have the time, Chet, we can do it now, and that way there's no risk that we'll be hitting your sleep time.
All right. Well, okay, we'll start now then. That's an interesting topic maybe for some people. All right, so let me first describe where I live. I live in just over the borderline from New York City into Nassau County, and my area where I can hook up an antenna is something like 35 feet by 35 feet. That's it. That's my backyard dimensions approximately. And I have, luckily, I have a center support. I got permission from the township in 1991 to put up a self-supporting metal pole, telescoping. I made it myself, welded it together. It's been up since 1991. Town said okay, and I also have a mast in one corner of my yard, about 30 feet high, aluminum mast, and then I have my chimney as the other support. I cannot put up. I definitely wanted to work 40 meters. I had a great experience on 40 meters, and I can't stretch 64 feet or so, which is the 40-meter half-wave dipole, and I can't stretch it out straight. I don't have enough room. So basically, I stretch on my center support at a V, a Victor Echo, a V, like a 100-degree angle, one side going to the chimney and the other side going to that mast, that 30-foot mast. I right now, the final configuration has been, I'm using a coming down from the center conductor area where the feed point is, which is up around, let's see here, around 35 feet up. I have a 300-ohm transmitting twin lead, which I bought from DX Engineering. Let me let it drop. And in the instructions of the antenna, that was in a QSB article, I think something like 1990-something, I could get the exact information on it, but that particular article went into a QSB antenna book, small book, and they put it was put into the ARRL's book. It said classic antennas. And the dimensions that they mentioned were, in the article, was one side, it's off-center fed, so one side was 46 feet, the other side was 23 feet. And I couldn't even stretch the 46-foot side, because going to my chimney from the center feed point, I had to let a couple of feet hanging straight down. It was short on, I couldn't, you know, short on 46 feet. I think it was something like 43 or 44 feet, and then I let the rest of the wire drop straight down and easily get to 23 feet, which makes a total of 69 feet. And I could not, in the article, it said they were looking for a 110-foot feed line coming down, but then they mentioned, strangely in the article, something about quarter wave. Minimum of a quarter wave on 40 meters, somewhere around there. So when you make a long story short, let me let it drop. I could get, because of the drop point, I dropped 30 feet of 300-ohm transmitting twin lead and straight down, and then it was above, therefore the feed point down below at the bottom end of the 300-ohm twin lead, transmitting twin lead, would be the difference between how high I have it up at the top end, you know, where I had, you know, the dipole insulator. And in my particular case, let's say it's like 6 or 7 feet from the bottom of the ground. And then I put it mentioned to have a 6-to-1 balance for a 300-ohm transmitting feed line. And if you used different feed line impedance, like 450-ohm, then you can use a 4-to-1 or something. It's a long story, but I was lucky I had a 6-to-1 balance. And right underneath that, connected with a double PL-259 double male, I hooked up a 1-to-1 balun to get rid of any common mode. And then, of course, I had some feed line going to the rig. So, to make a long story short, when I first hooked, I had put my analyzer right there at the bottom of the 6-to-1 balun with that configuration. Let me let it drop. I found that the antenna was resonant, self-resonant. I was hoping that it would be in the 40-meter band, and it wasn't. It was something like 6.5 or something like that, megacycles. And I was astonished that it was well below, with 69 feet of wire up in the air, that it was well below 40 meters. So I didn't do any cutting, and I was really bummed out after the hard work of putting this thing up, using all the right materials and so on. And I was about ready to give up ham radio. It should have been like should have been in the 40 meter band almost. So I was thinking of cutting the feet, you know, the line, sorry, the antenna length to make it resonant into the 40 meter band, self resonant. But I had, prior to that, I had the antenna before that was a NFED, and you need radials, you need a counterpoise. And if you don't have a counterpoise for the NFED, you're going to be using your coax as a counterpoise. So I have actually strung counterpoises around my yard. I had two of them. Both of them were like 70 feet long, somewhere around there. It was above the ground counterpoises that was attached to my white ornamental plastic fence that went around my property in the back. So I had something like approximately 70 feet going one way and 70 feet going the other way. Anyway, I'm up on the ladder, and I'm bummed out by the what the reading on my antenna analyzer. And the counterpoise wires were not attached to anything at that moment because I removed them from my NFED. And I touched one of them, and I was looking at 40 meters, and it went to 1.3 as soon as I touched one of the counterpoise wires to the, I would call it, the grounded side of, you know, the outer conductor of the PL-259 coaxes. Let me let it drop. And then I removed that. I was just touching the coax, the PL-259 double male. I removed that, and the analyzer said 6.5 again. And then I touched the other wire, and it went to 1:1. And I said, whoa, I like that. Oh, on 40 meters, it was 1.1 or 1:1. I said, this is good. I said, wow. So I went in, into the radio room, which is in the garage, after I firmly attached the counterpoise to the valving area. And I got a few contacts, and everybody was giving me great reports. So I was very happy about that. I tried the different bands all the way up to 10 meters, and 15 meters wouldn't load. But it wasn't. But happily, I was getting every band. I was except 15 meters, but a very low SWR, less than 1.5, and with that arrangement of the balance, and I got every band: 40, 12, 17, 20, and 10 meters. So it was six bands. But the antenna allegedly in the article was. Didn't mention anything about 75 meters. So about a week or two later, I had nothing to do, and I said, let me try to load up on 75. I have an antenna coupler, a 2kW antenna coupler. And much to my amazement, the SWR on 75 meters almost across the whole band was less than 1.5, or around the worst case was 1.5, 1.6. With the antenna coupler, I was able to bring it to 1:1. I mean, let it drop. But then I said to myself, well, even though it loads up and I can adjust it to 1:1 across the whole 75-meter band from 3.5 all the way up to 4.0, I said, well, it doesn't mean anything because the antenna could be a dummy load and maybe, you know, it might load up with the antenna coupler. We get a lower reading of the SWR. Nobody might hear me. Because a few years ago, I built a 75-meter antenna with coils, a shortened 75-meter antenna. And I did get out, but I was not getting good signal reports. Very low, you know, low compared to where I wanted to be on 75. Anyway, so I'm listening around 75 meters at night, and it's all nets. Nobody calls CQs. I'm the type of guy to call CQs. I don't want to get involved in nets because I don't have enough time to be sitting around for hours talking to three or four guys, you know, about this and that, you know, what they talk about. I didn't want to interrupt anybody to get a signal report. But at any rate, finally, after a day or so, I'm listening, and I said, let me try this thing. Let me call CQ. I called three CQs at night, one after the other. Also, the guy comes back to me, and he says, hi, I'm in Massachusetts, and you're 25 over 9. Exactly what I wanted. So it's working gangbusters. The antenna is working on gangbusters, and now I have another band. So that's why I'm very happy about my antenna. So the trick in my case was the counterpoise, WB2HK.
AC2GS. So that's a great story, Chet, and I congratulate you. I think I might have a rationale for what's going on. It's not so much as it acting as a counterpoise, but it's acting as one of the legs of your off-center dipole, and in a way you sort of inverted it. Your original long end of your Wyndham is now your short end, and your short end is now your long end, because you've gone from a 46-foot long end to an actual 70-foot long end. So I think that's what's really ultimately going on. And you have the little stub of 23 feet on what was once the short end of your off-center fit. So I think you just kind of swapped directions and lengthened your off-center dipole. That probably makes as much sense as anything.
Then I speak to my buddies, my elder statesman and ham, my radio friend that I've been known for many years, and he analyzed what I did, and he says, you know what you got? You have a G5RV. It's off-center fed, yes. And I was heading to make an off-center fed dipole. But it turned out I made a G5RV. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, you put the counterpoise at the feed point, right? Or was it at the end of the open line?
It was attached to the, at the base of the 6-to-1 bowing. 30 feet down from the feed point.
Oh, okay, so it was past the balance. So, yeah, I guess that would be more rational. G5RVs are mysterious antennas. They were incredibly popular 15 years ago. I think their fame has faded away. I regularly tell the story that the originator of it, a guy from the UK with call sign G5RV, had an antenna farm. He passed away, I think, about 6 years ago. And he had an antenna farm, and before they kind of disassembled it, they took a look around. They found all kinds of interesting new designs. You couldn't find a single G5RV anywhere. So I think he kind of explained it and gave it to the world back in either the late 50s or the early 60s, and then he went on from there. So, yeah, it's probably a very complicated multi-mode radiator that you have there, similar to the way the G5RVs have numerous modes. They operate radiating off of the open wire. They use the open wire as a stub in some modes, and it's incredibly complicated to try and listen to anyone who tries to explain how it's resonant at all those frequencies. So I end the same way I began. I congratulate you on good luck. And that you have an amazing antenna. The problem that I have heard with G5RVs is that they're very sensitive to their environment. And so I've talked to people who put up G5RVs and loved them. I've talked to other people who put them up and hated them. So I tend to think that there's a much greater environmental effect when it comes to G5RVs than something simple like center-fed dipoles or even standard off-center dipoles. And, you know, it makes perfect sense what you did with the off-center dipole, the original design. Because it's at resonance, it has a nominal impedance at the center feed of about 50 ohms. You're going one-third off there. So it increases to about 300. So then you're feeding it with a similar impedance open line that's rated at 300 ohms. And because you got to get it back into your radio that likes 50 ohms, you're using a 6-to-1 transforming impedance balance. So it's an interesting little add-on that you grounded it at that point and kind of put it into multi-mode pseudo G5RV state. So congratulations.
Roy, WS2M.
Right up. Okay, so basically speaking, to duplicate my antenna would be impossible for somebody else. But what I'm trying to say is that one should experiment. One should experiment. You shouldn't be afraid to experiment and try something slightly different. So there's no magic thing. Each location of a ham radio antenna installation is not exactly the same as the next guy. And if somebody tried to duplicate what I have, it would be impossible. You know? So I'm lucky. But I would have not known this if I didn't already have the counterpoise wire running around my yard on my fence, 3 feet up off the ground. And nobody would actually, you know, add that to the combination of what I originally, built. And it was just luck of the Irish, that I already had that counterpoise there. Two of them, two different ones, one going one way in my backyard, and one going the other way. And I got lucky. So, one, basically speaking, you start out with dimensions, and then you, things could change. They did mention 110 foot coming down on the feed line. I only used 30. And they said something, vaguely said something about a quarter wave. Every quarter wave, the impedance repeats itself. So at any rate, I got lucky, and I don't have anything that anyone, as I said, could, you know, say, oh, I'm going to build one like him, because it might not work exactly in another person's backyard. But one should never be afraid to experiment, and that's what ham radio was all about, having fun and experimenting. But I was about ready to give up ham radio after working so hard to build this thing, after working with the NFET that I was trying to build, and it did work, but the actual performance of the NFET that I built is certainly not as favorable as what I wound up with here. This is working much better than my NFET. Doesn't mean anything wrong is wrong with NFET. It's just in my particular case, it was noted by me that what I built here, the final antenna that I wound up with, is performing much better for me in my environment. Okay, so station that was wanting to break in, go ahead, WB2AHK, with the permission of Roy.
Yes, Paul, please.
Very good. I missed how long the ladder line was. Curious about that. Now, I have the G5RB Junior. You know, the regular G5RB ladder line is, I mean, long. I mean, it looks like it's about, I don't know, 30, 40 feet long. But this, the Junior, it's only about 15 feet long. I'm just curious about how long you made yours. Anyway, back to you.
All right, very good, Paul. Okay, you're the space expert. I listen to you whenever I'm still awake, and I enjoy your commentary on that. You do an absolutely terrific job, very, very knowledgeable, and you work very hard producing that every week. So I want to let you know that I enjoy it quite a bit. Okay, well, I can give three dimensions here that I know exactly. I mean, they didn't vary from this. On my left center fed dipole, 46 feet going one way, 23 feet going to the right of the center conductor, feed point at the top. So it's 23 going one way, 46 the other, and the length, in my case, was 30 feet exactly. I cut it. It's 300 ohm transmitting twin lead. I bought that DX Engineering. I had to buy 100 feet of it. They won't sell you 30 feet of it. I paid $100 almost. Yeah, I paid $100 for this transmitting coax twin lead 300 ohm. So I got, if anybody wants any, if they want any of this 300 ohm transmitting twin lead, I'll be willing to part with what you need. Any rate, it was 30 feet coming down to the bowing. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. Yeah, mine's only about 15. But you buy it that way, you know. I got mine from Radio Oasis, a place in California, and they were selling junior G5RBs. So now I, mine is set to bed. So I was just curious. It's very similar to your G5RB, what you made, except the yours is offset. But really in that same category. Mine works good too. It's set up really for 40 meters, like you said, around 60 feet. And then the changes over to ladder line and then goes to coax, except for that. Very good. Okay, yeah, thanks for the nice words with the Space Net report. Yeah, we have a lot of fun with that anyway. Anyway, back to you, Roy. Just curious about that, and it sounds good. Mine works great on 40 meters as well. Back to you, Roy.
Sure, fine, no problem. The phrase of the week is your mileage might vary, as Chet mentioned. In life in general, you do have to be lucky, but it's always nice to be curious and to be clever. You know, Fleming left a bunch of Petri dishes in the sink over the weekend, and when he came back, he found that bacteria didn't occupy a portion of the Petri dish, and he was curious enough to swab it and check to see what the hell was inhibiting the bacteria, and he discovered a mold was producing something, and the mold was, I think, called penicillium. So that's where penicillin came. And Fleming was lucky, but he was curious, and he was clever. So as you are, Chet.
Just lucky.
Okay, you're lucky and humble. I appreciate humility. Any other comments before we ask for any other questions or comments? Please feel free.
Hey.
Yep.
Yes, sir. I'd just like to verify your email. It's your call sign plus what?
AOL.
AOL.com. Verify.
Verified, yes, verified.
Thank you very much. I'll send you a message. Interesting, the comment on penicillin and ivermectin was found about the same way. Anyway, back to Roy.
Well, yeah, luck plays a big part in just about everyone's life. The most reasonable people I've ever seen interviewed ultimately will say that the most important thing that got them where they were was luck. I guess it could work both ways. Some people have too much bad luck and have to pay the price. But, fortune is very useful to have.
You happen to be familiar with the invention of Gore-Tex?
Only very vaguely.
From what I understand, they're trying to develop the fiber for sometime with much lack of success. And desperation one night, one of the engineers took a slug of the material they were using, the polymer material, and he just did up from doing an experiment and just yanked it, and it stretched out into this beautiful fibrous material that became what we all put in our ski jackets today. Turned out the thing that made the whole thing work is the speed that you pulled the heated up polymer. That's where Gore-Tex comes from.
Okay, that's a good one. A lot of things are just good luck, fortuitous types of discoveries. I believe the early polymerization of plastics was accidental. They had left it on the Bunsen burner too long or something, and they were trying to synthesize something completely different, and the whole thing turned into gelatinous glop. And they went back to it and tried to figure out what it could be used for. I don't remember if that was turned out to be a bakelite, but it was one of the earliest plastics that was discovered. Now we have all manner of polymerization-based plastics. So, that's kind of the history of a lot of chemistry. You mix stuff together, and then you have to figure out what the heck you made. Okay, your volume is incredibly low. It's probably something like 16 dB below all the rest of us. So if you could either speak really loud into the microphone or raise the gain, I would appreciate it. Okay, unfortunately, I'm not hearing anything. So I don't know what exactly you did, but it didn't help. So if you want to try again, we'll give you a little time. Well, the good news is the amplitude was a little bit louder, but the problem is you were about 98% noise. So I don't know what you're operating on. If it's a handy-talkie, if you move it around, put it closer to the window, maybe rotate it from horizontal to vertical or vertical to horizontal, or, you know, if you have a little elevation somewhere near your house, maybe try that. But right now the signal gets into the repeater, but with no audio to speak of. Okay, it's still noise, unfortunately. You know, we do have a EchoLink access. You know, if you have an EchoLink account, you can get on that on either your cell phone or your computer. And, you know, there's some timing issues, but otherwise it's a reasonable way to communicate on the net. So that's another option for you. We also have All-Star Link if you happen to have an All-Star interface.
WS2N, if he's not going to make it.
Yeah, I think so, too, unfortunately. So the gentleman trying to get in, you know, if you want to rethink what's causing the problem and try again later, hopefully we'll still be around here. So please keep tuned. And, again, if you can handle EchoLink connections, consider that. It's not as much fun as RF, but it gets the job done. So with that in mind, once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net, and we're open to business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please feel free. Hit that push to talk and give me your call sign and your first name.
WS1, one more comment on this G5RV.
Norpool.
Yeah, I'm just looking it up. They still in business, Radio Oasis, and it's, I guess, dropped in price. I remember paying like $90-something. Now it's like $53 or something like that. But, which that's, antenna was 61 feet long, and this is 51 feet long. That's what I have. And the lateral line, I guess it was 15 feet. It's actually 16 feet on the 450-ohm lateral line, so 16 feet. But, you know, they still sell it. Works good. It's supposedly 10 through 40. Unless you get near, you know, some kind of a building or something too close. Like you said, that might throw things off. Roy, back to you.
Yeah, according to Chet, it's, the off-center is a total of about 69 feet long in a V configuration. Yeah, I think it's the open line is sensitive to local conductors. You know, back in the good old days, everyone used open line. It had very low attenuation loss. But the downside was that you couldn't grab a bunch of them and bring them into the house together. They'd couple with each other. And if you had aluminum siding, it would screw up. And, you know, you didn't want to put it through a metal frame window. So, you know, when World War II was over and Army Surplus had tons and tons of well-shielded coaxial cables, everyone switched pretty much to coax. So that probably is what is giving G5RV its problematic erraticness. You know, it's very sensitive to the installation site. You know, there's some antennas that just are very isolated and don't interact with anything. G5RVs apparently interact with almost anything.
Yeah, luckily mine is strung between two trees away from the house, so I'm okay. By the way, they must be very proud of the inventor of this. It's Louis Bamey that we were trying to think of before. Bamey. and he invented it in 1940. They got different G5RBs here for the different bands. So far, so good. I had some problems because of the steel wire, that they use going in the diet with the different insulators, but it's coated, it's copper clad. If you get a lot of wind and starts moving back and forth too much at that joint, it could break. And mine did, but I wanted to repair. It could snap. It's steel. Steel is good. It's strong, but at the same time, it doesn't like to be twisted back and forth thousands of times. Back to you, Eric.
Yeah, and it has a very strong memory. So you usually buy it coiled. And it really wants to stay coiled. I've played around with copper clad steel wire. It's not the easiest wire to put in position. It's a little on the stubborn side.
Oh, yeah, exactly right. Yeah. But once it's up, it's up. Same problem you have with this is, if you have ropes tied up to the trees, branches go through it. Eat through the ropes, squirrels bite through your ropes, outside of that, no problem. But I managed to get around that as well. It's a pretty thick rope, 3/8 thick. So it's been up there a long time. But it does start to sag, so every couple of years, you really should pull on it. Years ago, I had the pulley system with the brick hanging down, and I think it used to be swinging all over the place in the breeze. But I've done away with that as well, so back to you, Ron.
Yeah, I use something like that, I kind of locked it in nearby positions, so it didn't really swing. It would just kind of slide up and down on a kind of jacketed little piece of wire that I tied around the pole that it was dropped down onto. Eventually, though, for whatever reason, it kind of jumped the pulley system. So I too kind of gave up on it. It was an expensive pulley too. It was one of those marine pulleys. So I thought that was not going to happen, but it did.
BHG
plastic clothesline pulleys, and then I never had a problem with that. That was the way to go. And it was plastic. Well, probably ABS plastic. It was a very strong plastic pulley. But that held up for 10, 15 years, I guess. And I just did away with it. I didn't like that. I had this brick swinging around in the breeze. Like you said, I put a stake in the ground and put a wire off so it wouldn't swing too much. But, it looks good on paper to design that, but when your trees are moving, the trees move that back and forth that fast, that brick is not going to go up and down that fast. It's not going to keep up with the oscillations of your trees. So you're still going to wear out something. It's not really the way to go. I found it to be a problem. So I just leave it without any pulley system. Have the rope go up around a branch. Hope for the best. If it breaks.
Yeah, sometimes things are a bit over-engineered. I understand. Mine was a very small pulley. And like I said, I got a marine one because I thought it was stainless steel and it was corrosion resistant. And it didn't corrode. It just, at one point or another, the wind probably moved the rope over from the groove in the pulley and I got it stuck off to the side or such. Thankfully, I didn't have to deal with trees. I posted it onto a laundry line pole. But still, windy conditions of a fan dipole, they'll kind of move to the left and move to the right. And if you don't give them an opportunity to kind of give a little bit, I was concerned that they would snap, which ultimately they did snap. Once I did away with the pulley system, and then other things happened. But that's for a different story for a different time.
BHD.
Yes, Jim.
A couple of thoughts on this topic. It's been something I've been thinking about a lot. And while I have much to learn on the electricity portion of the antenna game, analytical rigging stuff is much more interesting.